everyone's looking for a silver bullet. To actually deal with the underlying issue, it requires a tool and it requires effort and help, right? So the help comes from us at Nushama in terms of providing the set and setting and the medical supervision and having preparation and integration. But the work comes from the effort that the member, as we call them, puts into this, right? You cannot be a passive player in your own existence.
Cause I don't want to come back down from this cloud. It's taking me all this time. Yeah. I don't want to come back down from this cloud.
Jay, how are we?
Good. How you doing? Sorry for the delay.
It's all on me here. Had to switch offices, and that's why I'm sweating and wearing a hat. So.
I was wondering.
Yeah.
Man sweating. That
was your first inquiry, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you guys so much for taking the time here to talk with me. I spoke with Marissa, did a deep dive on the business model at Nushama and all the things that y'all are doing there. And it's really both inspirational and from an entrepreneurial perspective, and I think from more an altruistic, more, you know, social impact perspective as well. I guess if I could start with Rich, because we were talking a little bit about how he was in the legal field and this and that. I'm just interested first to know what kind of brought you in. I think you might have mentioned a book in a New York Times interview, or was it How to Change Your Mind? What was the thing that clicked, Rich, and said, I'm going to be an entrepreneur?
Well, I was recruited to join the cannabis industry in Canada as a senior executive at a licensed producer. And it was very exciting because, I mean, how often does something that was illegal become legal? The last time was like 90 years ago with Prohibition. So it was a very exciting time to be able to join an industry that had been underground forever and then was, you know, and building the framework for its legal adoption by consumers. The interesting thing about cannabis,
academics, would you say as well, sort of? Renegade.
What's that?
Sort of renegade academics and some underground.
Yeah, I mean, look, there were academics who were studying the benefits of CBD and THC for a long time. There was always, I mean, I remember, you know, as a kid at a bookstore in the magazine section seeing like High Times and all these sort of very countercultural magazines and obviously, there were a lot of celebrities, whether it was, you know, Snoop Dogg or Woody Harrelson or Willie Nelson, who were really always promoting the benefits of cannabis. But, you know, from like a business point of view, to sort of create something whole cloth out of nothing is always pretty exhilarating. In Canada, like in many U.S. states, there's both a recreational market and a medical market. In Canada, both happened to be legal, and the medical market obviously predated the recreational market. But in the medical side, a lot of the arguments or a lot of the usage were for military veterans who served in Afghanistan. Canada was in Afghanistan for almost 20 years. And a lot of the veterans coming back from that conflict suffered from acute PTSD. The rate of suicide in the Canadian Armed Forces was shockingly high and very distressing to both citizens and politicians. And so medical cannabis was seen as a salve for the treatment of PTSD. What I saw, though, in terms of the prescriptions that some of these men and women were receiving was they were like staggeringly high, 5 to 10 grams a day in some instances, which is, if you know anything about weed, that's a lot. I mean, that's a lot. And so you're essentially stoned from the minute you wake up to the minute you go to sleep at night, which is better than self-harm, but is not a way to live and is not really addressing the underlying issue. And so it was in reading Michael Pollan's book, How to Change Your Mind, that illuminated to me this opportunity to actually get to the heart of the trauma and to deal with it at its source and actually help people heal themselves and get better. And not just band-aid their problems, but to address their problems.
So,
and
yeah, I'm sorry. Sorry to jump in.
You sound
so antithetical to Big Pharma, you know, the subscription model. And I think that's, although Big Pharma is going to have their fingers in this eventually. I just admire that. I mean, cure the damn thing. Don't send somebody into a bacteria ridden pool of water with a bunch of cuts and then treat it with antibiotics. Why don't you just not have cuts in the first place? You know,
like, well, I mean, look, there everything that is valuable, generally speaking, requires effort and work, yeah. Right? If you want to get in shape, you know, everyone now wants to take Ozempic. Great. I mean, but everyone's looking for a silver bullet, right? Yeah. A silver bullet for this, a silver bullet for that. Oh, I have depression. I can take this pill and I won't have depression anymore. Whether it's Prozac or Lexapro or Wellbutrin or whatever it happens to be. I'm anxious. I can take an Ambien or I can take this or that. To actually deal with the underlying issue requires a tool. And in this case, the only legal psychedelic tool that we have available to us is ketamine. It requires a tool and it requires effort and help, right? So the help comes from us at Nushama in terms of providing the set and setting and the medical supervision and having, you know, preparation and integration. But the work comes from the effort that the member, as we call them, puts into this, right? You cannot be a passive player in your own existence, or you're going to ask all the time, you know, what the hell just happened, instead of making shit happen, right? So that is the fundamental issue, that notwithstanding the fact that the ketamine is this unbelievably powerful tool that allows us to get, you know, behind the ego, as it were, and deal with the underlying issues, you still got to put the effort in. Yeah. And that is where, you know, just from a broader society point of view, there's often a struggle. Like, I want this to be effortless. I want to slip into a warm bath. And I want to slip into a warm bath too. It's very nice to slip into a warm bath.
I want to order my McDonald's in advance so that it's ready.
I don't want to wait. I want to
drive through time too long.
Right. Correct. Right. So, and look, convenience and saving time and all that, there's a place for all that. But when we're talking about radical personal transformation, it doesn't come through slipping into a warm bath. It simply doesn't.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's incredibly well said. You struck on so many different neuronal pathways in my brain there with sort of more of a teleological view of things. You know, you can change yourself. It's an Adlerian psychology type of a mindset. The mind is pliable. You mentioned the veterans. And a statistic I found just so compelling was that 11% of Americans are suffering from complex PTSD, and more of these Americans are not ex-military. You know, a lot of women suffering some sexual assault and things of that.
Yep.
So I think it's just criminal, really. I mean, in from a moral perspective, that. Oh, now was it Nixon who sort of put these on type one?
Yeah.
Things put them on schedule one. Yeah. So no, I love that, and I agree with you. Everything valuable does require work. My dad used to say that to me all the time. I wonder, you said in New York, you mentioned New York, and Jay, too, I promise I'm equally fascinated by you, and I have a lot of questions, but I'm sure you were like, whatever, I'll play Candy Crush.
Why is this guy so fascinated with Richard?
I mean, I'm intimidated by the savage growth, man. I can't do that, you know, and the flowing hair, man. It's just, I'm just a hater. So. I'm really interested to know, you know, in New York, it seems to be the only place in which S-ketamine is prescribed to patients, whereas your clinic, as far as I know, I mean, it's certainly the most dominant. It's got 18 patient rooms and it's an entire second floor. I looked at the facility. Just, was this a response to the fact that this is among the most efficacious ways to deal with some of these complex emotional problems, and it's the only solution at our disposal? I guess my question is, in the future, do you consider incorporating more of a sort of a portfolio, maybe of atypical solutions that are highly efficacious?
Yeah, you raise a number of really good questions within your question. Starting first with the idea that ketamine as a generic medication that's cheap, available, safe. It's got a 50-year track record in clinical use, whether it be as a anesthetic, as an analgesic for pain relief, used in operating theaters for the pediatric population. It's available and cheap and safe, which is amazing. And it's fascinating. It's an exceptional tool that can be used to, on the physiological side, in simplest terms, rewire the brain and create neuroplasticity, which, you know, the science tells us that the neuroplastic effect of ketamine creates a rapid antidepressant effect. That is something that an SSRI does not do. That is something that benzos don't do. And it doesn't have the side effects that both SSRIs and benzos do. So it's a wonderful, wonderful tool.
Saying but no ED, no ED with ketamine. That's what you're saying? Because a lot of these SSRIs, first of all, what is it? It's a 58%, 33% of patients don't respond at all. They're like sugar pills.
Yeah.
You got to take them for 6 weeks. Big Pharma loves that, you know?
Yeah.
And then, oh, great. I've got ED and I can't sleep and all this stuff. I mean, yeah, sorry.
Yeah, and that's just the tip of the iceberg, Woody. I mean, you've got, situations of weight gain and whether it be ED or just lower libido. Going off of your SSRIs once you're on them can be very, very challenging. And if you're on a benzo, it can be outright dangerous to do it in a non-medically supervised kind of hasty way. So this right now, I would say that ketamine for mood disorders is the gold standard for treating depression, anxiety, PTSD, and even addiction. One thing that I will address, given that many other molecules such as MDMA and psilocybin are coming down the pipeline and you know, God willing, will be approved in the next, let's call it, year to 5 years for a variety of different indications. I envision clinics like New Shama being having a number of tools at our disposal that not only will treat on their own different indications, but can also be stacked together to create customized formulas for each patient. So, you know, you could foresee somebody coming in with depression and actually stacking MDMA and psilocybin together to create an experience that is actually easier to navigate than just a psilocybin only treatment. I believe 5-MeO-DMT will be a molecule that will be in clinical use within a decade or slightly more. LSD in shorter form. Probably
a lot of baggage on that one, right?
What's that?
A lot of baggage on that one from the CIA to the
there's a ton of baggage on those. There's no question. And I think there's probably a branding problem associated with the word LSD as there is with the word psychedelic. But you know, it's one thing for me or Rich or any of the other kind of evangelists within the industry to talk about it, but the data is starting to really talk for itself.
Yeah.
And when you start to see that, you know, LSD for chronic pain conditions or anxiety isn't more efficacious than anything out there, ketamine more efficacious than anything out there, MDMA for PTSD, psilocybin for depression, it's hard to ignore these things.
Yeah.
And yes, they might be invariants to what Big Pharma wants, but I think people are sick and tired of being sick and tired. And it's time for some real solutions.
The traditional therapy arrangement, no shade on anybody in the industry, but efficacy rates, remission rates, sub 30% for kind of your standard, you know, oh, your time is up. And it's tremendously helpful. Don't get me wrong. I think paired with, in many cases, again, to your point, personalized care, getting to know the patient on a personal level, really understanding the nuances of what the complex adaptive system that is the human brain and how to treat that. You know, you don't just sling medications that spray serotonin all over your brain and then, you know, hope that it hits the right transmitter. I think it's fascinating how ketamine operates on a different system in glutamate, as opposed to that particular serotonin receptor that psilocin hits. Again, all the medical jargon is, I'm looking at that beard and it's falling right out of my brain. I'm just too intimidated. So, Rich, if I could ask you a quick question, huge hurdle. You know, I ran my own business for 3 years. I was an investment manager and financial advisor, and that industry gets a lot of shade thrown at it, rightfully so. And I went in very idealistically and I said, look, the problem is hidden fees, poor advice, no actual help. I mean, they put you in an allocation. They give you a bullshit Monte Carlo simulation with a bunch of rigged numbers. Oh, inflation will never rise and you'll make 6% a year. Look, you're good for retirement, baby. Go get that Jag, go get that car. And that's what people want to hear from their advisor. And my guy's great, you know. And I kind of hated that because I worked at those places. Anyway, my point being, it's very difficult, A, to market things that are counterculture. And in a sense, my pitch was not to the extent that yours is, but it's sort of counterculture. And I would say, what sort of hurdles were the most daunting from a legal perspective? I mean, was there a lot that fell on your shoulders there? And then Jay also weighing in on the marketing side and things of that nature. Are people in New York just cooler? I mean, I know they are, but what were those challenges?
So from a legal point of view, there's a long checklist that you have to sort of go through in terms of having the right credentials and having the right structure. Of course, your medical lead has to have a DEA license in order to handle Schedule III drugs, and the DEA will show up and make sure that the ketamine is not being diverted, and making sure that all the reconciliation between what you've ordered and what you've administered all lines up. But it's a robust checklist, but it is something that you can overcome and address if you have the right skills and the right training. The reality is, though, ketamine for mood disorders is an off-label use of ketamine, and so it's not covered by insurance, and so that creates some barriers to entry in terms of the widest possible access.
Was that the Care First integration? Was that what drove some of that? Care Credit.
Care Credit is a tool that allows people to make medical purchases and spread the payments over a number of a number of months. Absolutely, we're always thinking about ways to make this more manageable for people. But the reality is while there is some sticker shock associated with what we charge, when you think about the labor, the cost of labor, the specialized skill set of the labor, the real estate, the location, all that works out to about $250 an hour for treatment, which is hardly outrageous, especially considering that it works and that it's somewhat time bound and limited, meaning it's not seeing a psychiatrist or a psychotherapist every week for the rest of your life.
Right. It's not that subscription you forgot about, right?
If you sit down with a therapist every week and it's $250 a session, you're looking at 12 grand a year, give or take. So, and you may not be any further ahead than you were when you started. That's not to say that a lot of people don't get a lot of benefit and insight and relief, frankly, from talk therapy. It is to say that some people, though, especially those with treatment-resistant depression, which means that they've tried two or more solutions for their depression that have not worked, that they're stuck and that they're spinning their wheels, right? And so, and the question I ask, is like, what is your life worth? Right. And so figure out how to put together $4,800, and we'll help you as many ways as we can. We'll help you break it down as little as $200 a month. Right. But you got to help prioritize your own well-being as well.
Tony Robbins gatherings, man, they just spent that on going to Nushama and getting some sessions in. I think it would be a little bit more, let's say, the big existential questions, which I say, why not?
Right.
Why not stare those in the face and be a little bit, be a little bit Nietzschean about it and say, damn the torpedoes, let's fucking go. And let's attack some of these things, this deep seated angst, not like my coworkers are mean, but what really is, bugging you? I think it's amazing. I wanted to ask about the facility, if you don't mind. Jay, did you, with the fashion background that you have, and I can see why. Again, I'm not hitting on you, man. I'm just now it's just a bit.
I was like, wow.
Now it's just becoming a bit now. I talked a little bit to Marissa about the design of the place. I asked any kind of biophilic design, or I know there's sound therapy involved, but I wonder how you sort of shaped the space, or if you were involved in that, or what drove you to this mission in the first place, aside from, frankly, the altruistic upside.
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think the easiest way to answer it is kind of with the old kind of Buddhist philosophy of start with a beginner's mind. And that's what we really did here, which is we're coming into a brand new field with doctors administering medicine, and we had a choice to make. Yep. Do we want our members or patients to come into a space that makes them feel sick? Or do we want them to feel like they're in process of healing? And so that was kind of the departure, what we looked at, and what would a space that lends itself to healing look and feel like? What is the energy in the space? What do we want people to feel as they walk in and sit down and walk out? So we made a very early decision when we were working with interior designers in creating the look and feel for not only our flagship location in New York, but all future locations, which is we want it to feel as if you were walking into a euphoric psychedelic journey, but without the kind of classic tropes of 1960s psychedelia, because a lot of those really aren't all that real. Yeah. We wanted the space to be calming, yet beautiful, colorful, but not over the top, and a space that lent itself really to that kind of intersection between medicine, psychedelics, and hospitality. And we recognize this is not about us being the healers, whether you're a doctor at Nushama, a therapist, or founders like Richard and I. This is about providing a space that allows one to heal from within. Yes. So not only is the ketamine, and in the future the MDMA and the psilocybin once it's legalized, not only are those facilitator medicines and tools, but the people here are facilitator people.
Yes.
And the decor and the look and feel of our centers are also there to help facilitate healing.
So that's an interesting needle to thread. I think some of the titans of the past that maybe were too titanic in their presence and their vigor about the impact of LSD and the like, in a sense, contributed to putting it underground, with some of their claims, and the studies, I think, were maybe infected perhaps by some of that excitement. So threading that needle between, to use some Kahneman references, to sort of give off an initial sense of authority, maybe the white lab coats, do they wear the lab coats?
There is not a lab coat to be found.
Okay. So, but certainly cleanliness, this is like a serious place for healing. It's not overdone. It's not, there's not like, there's probably not like Led Zeppelin posters everywhere.
No.
But just sort of giving it an aesthetic. I mean, that's just tremendously important to setting up The Brain, this book, The Expectation Effect, that I Can't Stop Bugging, just how, you know, manipulate the placebo, you know, in everything you do.
You know, Timothy Leary and Richard Alpert, when they were working at Harvard in the 60s with the LSD and psilocybin work that they were doing, really put a great emphasis on two things that influence heavily the psychedelic experience and the ability to heal. One of them is called SET, which is the mindset of the person going into their journey. What are they thinking about? What are their intentions? And the other one is the setting, of course, that they do it in. So collectively or together, SET and setting. And setting, if somebody's coming into a space that feels very sterile and white box and lab coats, they're going to go into their journey and their treatment with the idea that I am sick. And we want people to go into their journeys rather with the idea that I am relaxed, I am open, I am going to surrender to the experience, and I'm going to do it in a place that is beautiful and nurturing, that espouses nature, that makes me dream just a little bit, and that adds, you know, a little bit of texture to their lives. And so I think we accomplish that in designing our spaces. It's a great place to be, even if you just want to relax. And that's what we were going for. We want people to walk in and feel kind of this collective exhale of, ah, okay, I'm here to start my healing process.
The business model itself, from what I understand, you send or you administer a certain number of doses, or can you send them, or is that a competing outfit?
That's different. Everything we do is in person.
Okay.
You know, we might do an intake, a medical intake virtually, but dosing, of course, takes place in our clinic. No ketamine leaves our premises, and integration takes place, and preparation and integration takes place before every session. We sell, you know, the evidence suggests that six is the right number of treatments to achieve a desired outcome, although some people may need more. Some people may find they've achieved a very profound breakthrough with fewer sessions, but all the research does suggest six. So we sell packages of six sessions, and it all takes place at our center in Midtown Manhattan.
Talking about set and setting, I think in particular, just the tremendous importance of going in and being with licensed professionals, being in a safe place with access to medical care, and in a place where you're, as Jay was talking about, you're sort of primed to be open. It's going to increase the efficacy of the experience. The fact that the experience it's tough, you know. So
I think there are certain journeys that can be very challenging.
Yep.
Right. There's no doubt. You may see things that on this journey that are very that are difficult, that are uncomfortable. But that's where the growth happens. Right. We don't grow in our comfort. We grow in our discomfort. And there's nothing, you know, there's no such thing in our view as a bad trip. There are trips that can be blissful and joyous and filled with love, and people cry from those because of their beauty and their and how special they can be. And then there are journeys that hold a mirror up to our own existence. And that mirror sometimes may show us things that we don't want to see.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean we shouldn't see them. It just means that they're uncomfortable.
I apologize. I don't mean to cross talk.
Not at all.
Just the fact that I became fascinated in just the space of psychedelics itself and AI, these are completely different things, but it's sort of like, don't just look at your fear, like follow your fear. You know, it's like, you know, power follows the blame finger. And I think fear and a fear response, a blocking out response, I'm not blaming the folks for doing it, but actually following the fear and following the blame, that's where to take things. That's how to fix the underlying props. And it shouldn't be a cakewalk. Again, I don't want to run over. I know that I ate into our time. I'd love to know how people can find more information about what I consider the premier outfit in this space. You guys are pioneers. I'm enamored with you. I really, particularly Jay.
And his Jay,
that's more an aesthetic.
I'm never getting my hair cut again.
Or that was more aesthetics. I don't know. I would say that
the best place to start is our website. We have a ton of, a very robust blog.
It is.
On our website that answers so many questions that people might have. So nushama.com is. Yeah, and also, you know, watch our content. We put a lot of content out on Instagram, on YouTube, on Facebook. So we're always trying to educate, because you were asking earlier what the issue is really in the space, and it is an issue of education. Most people have no idea when you talk to them about psychedelics, they have no idea what you're talking about. And if you talk about ketamine, they have no idea. Those who do have an idea about ketamine might know it as a street drug, Special K. They might know it as a horse tranquilizer.
Well, that's
very few of them.
Yep.
Very few of them would, you know, immediately jump and say, "Oh, it's an anesthetic."
Those Johns Hopkins papers. Yeah, those.
Right. So you're dealing with, there's a massive education issue around this, and a destigmatization issue, right? And for us, the critical message is that this is a very powerful tool that we can use to help people suffering from depression, anxiety, PTSD, addiction, to get unstuck, because they're stuck. They're very much stuck. They're stuck in their addictions. They're stuck in their, whether they're addicted to the past, depression, they're addicted to what's going to happen, anxiety, they're addicted to control, OCD, they're addicted to a substance, alcohol use disorder, cannabis use disorder, opiate use disorder. These are all just manifestations of certain kinds of addiction, and they're stuck. And where what the ketamine allows us to do is dissolve the ego and get to the heart of what you're stuck about.
Yep.
Right. And so but that fear, and there are, by the way, one of the most common things we hear about people who are interested, but then they can't make that final leap, is I'm worried what it will reveal about myself. So they would prefer to exist in their self delusion.
I may have diabetes. I don't want to know. Yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, exactly. Like till you have it go into a diabetic coma, or you know, parts start falling off. But like, it's the same thing here, right? That you'd rather not know. You don't want to hold the mirror up to yourself because you're afraid of what you're going to see. Okay, there are consequences to that line of thinking, though, and the consequences to that line of thinking are you're likely going to struggle with some of these issues that you don't want to confront because you're worried the confrontation.
My dad always said, you've still made a choice. If you're sitting idle, you've still made a choice. You know, it's,
of course.
This has been absolutely, truly, I'm not blowing smoke. This is a real blessing to have had the chance to chat with you.
Well, that's very kind of you to say.
And I hope that if I come banging on the facility door and y'all are around, that you'll lend me 5 minutes of your time, maybe have a coffee or something.
Absolutely. We'd love to host you.
Certainly.
Yeah. Hey, and Jay and Rich, thank you for what you do. Appreciate your time. Enjoy the rest of your day, fellas.
Thank you, Woody.
Thank you.
All the best.
Great speaking to you, Woody. Take care.
Take care.
Bye.